Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The Microsoft IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started.
Good morning. Welcome back to another episode of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast. We have another interview this week. So this week we have Ian Folds, and he just wrote a new book all about Azure that we're going to be talking about. Ian, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself real quick, let the audience know any relevant details. You can feel free to throw in Twitter handles and things like that, and then we'll get into it.
Sure. Good morning. Thanks for having me on, guys. So my name's Ian Folds. I'm a senior content developer with Microsoft, so I write a lot of the technical documentation, how-to samples at docs.microsoft.com. At the moment, I'm focusing on Azure Kubernetes Service, but I also did a lot on Azure Virtual Machines and Virtual Machine Skill Sets. So it was kind of a pretty good fit when Manning approached me to say, hey, would you look at writing a book on Azure? Kind of knew a little bit about it. I'd also been a premier field engineer with Microsoft before that, focusing on virtualization, Hyper-V, and Azure. So the book, Learn Azure in a Month of Lunches, follows along with the series that I think Don Jones on PowerShell side actually started up, where it's small little chunks of learnings throughout the month. So it's meant to be about 45 minutes or so each chapter. So you get some good conceptual background, you then get some hands-on labs that you can walk through. And it kind of guides through some of the infrastructure side, some of the IaaS stuff, gets into PaaS things. So we got some stuff on web apps, we got Cosmos DB, how you can do redundancy and security across both of those. So it should help both IT operations people and hopefully developers as they start to move into Azure. So that's a quick whirlwind, 1 minute elevator pitch of myself.
All right.
So awesome.
We get to cover a month's worth of lunches content in like 30-ish minutes or so.
Yeah, go. Say your stopwatch and then check it out. Yes, if you can't do it, then let me know. Some of them might get a little bit longer towards the end. They get a little bit in-depth, but we have tried to keep it at about 45 minutes to give people plenty of time to then, you know, still finish up their sandwich and get back to work.
Excellent. So you talked about IT pros and developers. Is this targeted at an audience that's maybe a little bit new to cloud and onboarding? Is it going to be helpful for people that are already familiar with Azure? Maybe they would just want to hop into a later chapter. Where does that fall out?
So hopefully it can kind of cover both. It does start out with the assumption that, you know, a little bit about what virtualization is. At this point, most people have probably worked on a virtual machine indirectly, but it does kind of give a quick overview just what cloud is, what some of the benefits might be. And then you start out first by creating a virtual machine, and then you create a web app. And a web app is just a platform as a service approach to running a website within Azure. So if you're totally new, then it does kind of start out and ramp you up, goes into storage and networking. If you already know a little bit about Azure, then you probably move on to some of the later chapters and jump in on some of the redundancy things like availability zones and skill sets. But also if you've been using another cloud provider, AWS, Google Cloud, something like that, then hopefully, again, you could transition that knowledge in, get some of the Azure basics and be like, okay, now I know what we're dealing with here. And really, that was the point of the book, is not to try and teach everything from scratch, but say you probably know quite a bit about what Azure is from what you've been doing over the last few years, be that in an on-prem role, be that in other cloud providers. Let's just show you how this rolls in Azure, how you can deploy this stuff in Azure and ultimately be successful.
When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic, but sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudit.
Great. So that's going to break down. I think it sounds just about like everything. And it looks like the book's broken into four parts and flows through like that as well, where we cover core infrastructure and compute. So virtual machines, web apps, storage, networking, all that good kind of stuff. Part two, you mentioned, dives into that DRAS and backup story, high availability, redundancy. Yep. You also cover templates in there too as well, right? So we get into not only kind of imperative provisioning with CLI and PowerShell, but also declarative provisioning with ARM templates and other tooling.
Yeah. So that was where it kind of got a little interesting, is that a lot of the book guides you through in the portal in the early stages, and then we more switch to Azure CLI. So built within the Azure portal is the Azure Cloud Shell. So it's a web-based CLI session that you can get into. And it kind of makes it a lot easier to deploy some of the resources and having to click through everything within the portal. But there are the Azure Resource Manager templates. So anyone who has ever worked with templates, you know, be that Terraform, be that CloudFormation, Azure Resource Manager is just a declarative way of being able to deploy resources. They can get a little bit gnarly and complex as you deploy large applications. So we touch on them, explain what they are, some of the functions that you can do within it, like loop over and create multiple resources. But one thing that I thought was really cool I wanted to highlight was you can deploy resources through the portal or through the CLI, but then inside the Azure portal, you can go and look and see what that resource manager template would be. And you can export that, you can make modifications, you can redeploy it. And so the idea is that ultimately in the real world, you're probably doing some kind of template-based approach. And then again, kind of wind your way up there. So if you're totally new, start in the portal. If you're okay, you know what you're doing, you could go CLI, you could even go straight into templates.
So does this talk about, I know we talked about kind of this targeting IT pros coming from that side of things. For me, I'm an IT pro and I have not done a lot of JSON or writing these templates. Does it walk you through even how to get started creating templates, or does it more just explain kind of what they are, how to use them, and like that import-export process you talked about?
So it's more explaining what they are and how you can use them rather than starting from scratch. I feel like when I've, you know, I delivered courses when I was premier field engineer, and from speaking with various different people that try and teach this, there's a lot to try and get started with if you just look at a basic text editor with no JSON in there and try and build up a resource manager template. So what I've tried to do in the book is say, here's a short example of what one looks like now. This would be your starting point. These are some of the functions you can do within there. This is what a resource provider looks like if you want to add a disk or an IP address. And so not to try and lead you down the path of copying and pasting, but to try and keep it as simple as possible. Don't try and write JSON by hand from scratch. Even I don't try and do that. But you should be able to understand and recognize what's happening there. And so you could then go and look at other templates and understand it. And, you know, over time, when you become more comfortable, you'll write them yourself. Visual Studio Code can help out as well. There's a plugin in Visual Studio Code that'll help you, you know, almost graphically build one out. So again, you're not having to sit down and write JSON yourself, kind of abstract that a little bit.
Yeah, I like the way you've laid this out. It's actually aligns really nicely to the way we teach Azure. So I work for a training company and, you know, we do this with students all the time. It's good to break it down. And I think, you know, the way you've laid it out with even guided examples. So for something like templates, let's start out with a quick start template. Don't start from scratch. That's a little bit crazy. You're not expected to know the schema and the functions and how this all comes together and actually validates. Here's some tooling that helps you. Go download this, start here, and pick one of these 400 awesome examples. Maybe not the one that does DSC and full-blown deployments of SharePoint or Exchange environments, but, you know, a simple VM.
Hey, jump in. That'd
be a good place to start.
Yeah, that's what you want to do, then go nuts.
Very cool. I also noticed that for code samples, folks aren't stuck to just the book. You're going to maintain a GitHub repo for those as well?
Yeah, so that was again, one of those tough ones. So, you know, to be quite open, Azure moves at a million miles an hour. So what you look at now when we're recording probably is going to be different in a week's time or 2 weeks' time. And so you have to kind of accept that Azure's going to change quickly. And so again, the book is kind of laid up so you get the core concepts, knowing things might change a little. So I was also aware when it came to code samples, just putting code in a book wasn't going to work. Or if you're having to try and type things out, that can get boring if you're wanting to just, you know, see something running. So all of the CLI examples, they all sit within a GitHub repo. So you can quickly get up to speed on that. As things would change, I can easily go ahead and check that. And I do have some automated testing as well that runs against those scripts. So if the CLI were to change, hopefully I would get a notification pretty quickly. I can update that next time you go and try and do one of the chapters. Lettuce code samples are already available for you online.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point that, you know, the code's out there and it's going to be kind of a nice path forward, and screenshots may be outdated. I can guarantee you most of these will be outdated within the next couple of weeks here.
Yeah,
you know, some might be outdated as of this morning. They just did a portal refresh today. You know, it's September 7th and they revamped just a bunch of stuff, even pre-Ignite. So it moves at a really interesting pace. So that's good. Everybody can go out there and it's all just in a public repo, so they can clone it, they can fork it, they can bring it down. So they won't learn just Azure. They'll also learn about GitHub and some kind of code management workflows, which is good for IT pros because we have to know that stuff as well.
Yeah, I think that was also kind of leaning towards this idea of infrastructure as code. So there's a whole bunch of fun buzzwords get thrown around, but especially when it comes to things like resource manager templates, the underlying premise is, you know, you can redeploy resources, you can update them as you go along, but you can also maintain some kind of history of what those templates would have looked like. And so starting to introduce people to GitHub is also a way of saying, hey, you might not do it publicly, you probably wouldn't do it publicly, in fact, if you're working in an enterprise, but you would have some kind of code repository, some kind of version control system where your templates, where your CLI or PowerShell scripts would sit. You have versioning along with that, and so you just get into this approach of, okay, I'm going to check something out, I'm going to make some changes, I'm going to commit it, and so you have that kind of history. Other people can see that, other people can contribute within a team, things like that.
Perfect. And you mentioned that, you know, these these samples and as folks are walking through the book, you know, they're meant to go and be hands-on and treated a little bit like a lab environment. So what can people do to get Azure up and running if they don't already have a subscription today?
Right at the very start of the book, in kind of the first chapter getting started, it guides you through how to set up one of the free Azure trial accounts. So you can sign up. It's a 30-day free trial. You get $150, $200 of credit. Kind of depends on where in the world you are and what your currency is. But we had the reviewers of the book go through on that free trial with that free credit, and they could complete all the exercises within there. So there's a couple of things that you'll see in chapters where you might look and say, why am I creating such a small VM when I'm doing a scale set? And it's to make sure that you're not going to go above any resource limits, you're not going to go above any cost limits. So if you're totally new to Azure, you can go ahead, get that free trial. It'll last you 30 days. So, you know, if you can follow along with this premise of a month of lunches, then you should be good. But even beyond that 30 days, I think you have a year of a number of free resources for things like web apps and IoT that would continue. So even if you don't get all those later chapters done, you could still do it all for free without having to have your credit card dinged at the end of the month.
Yeah, no, there's a bunch of stuff that carries through in the free ones. And if anybody's Visual Studio subscriber, or maybe you work for a Microsoft partner, you may potentially get MPN subscriptions that include Azure credits, things like that. So probably a number of ways that folks can kind of onboard and get into there. So as everybody's going through this book, I know you've got to kind of spin resources up and clean them up as you go. Do any of these examples build on each other? So maybe we take something like that web app and then, you know, we interact with it to back it up and keep going. Like, does everything follow a story or an architecture? Are they meant to be little islands so we can really get them done in those kind of 45 minute to an hour segments and get through them?
So the goal is that everything is self-contained in a chapter, but the concepts build on each other. So that's where you maybe lean on some of those GitHub scripts and some of those templates, and that you might have, okay, here I'm going to go ahead and deploy a virtual machine, or I'm going to deploy a web app in one of the earlier chapters. One of the later chapters, we might deploy three virtual machines in a scale set. So I don't walk through how to do that. I say, run this template, and now we're going to go and talk a little bit more concepts. So they're building on top of each other, but you shouldn't have resources that are left over. I think there's only maybe one instance right at the end of the book where you spin up a Azure IoT hub, and so you play around and do some cool stuff with turning a light on and off. You know, it's really exciting. It's to give you the concept of what IoT would be and how you can communicate back and forth through Azure. And then the last chapter, we touch on serverless. So we do Azure Functions and Azure Logic apps. And so that does then directly build on top of the IoT hub. But everything else, you should be able to delete at the end of your lunch break or dinner break, or whenever it is you're doing it, and then come back for the next chapter and logically build on top. But you won't have had a bunch of resources just sitting there overnight.
Got it. So the knowledge that you would gain going beginning to end kind of can build on each other from that knowledge standpoint. But from the resources that you would utilize in the lab, they don't really build on backing up a VM you created in an earlier lab or load balancing VMs you created back in chapter one.
Correct. So if you wanted to, you certainly could leave them running. But otherwise, we assume that when we get into backing up VMs, we deploy a fresh VM and we'll back that up. Just to try again, look at the core concepts rather than, hey, you know, a week ago when we did something, now you've got to try and remember what you did. It's like, no, I want to focus on backup and securing that backup. And so it starts out from scratch.
Awesome. So we've got kind of core services in there, like we talked about, you know, compute, networking, and storage, and backup and recovery. So you mentioned IoT Hub. What are some of the other areas that might go outside of kind of just core compute that you're looking at? So IoT hubs, serverless, I imagine you're going to cover containers, being that you do AKS. Yep. and documentation there.
Yeah, so I was always a little biased on that one. But so you said earlier on that the book's broken up into four sections. And the last section of the book, I think, is just called The Cool Stuff. And so it touches on things like IoT hub and serverless functions and logic apps. It does get into containers. So it gives an overview of, you know, what containers are. Those last chapters are where you could still do them isolated. If you don't know what containers are, it gives you an overview of what they are, what Docker is, how Docker's involved, a little bit of a background on Kubernetes, and then we start to look at Azure Kubernetes Service, Azure Container Registry, Azure Container Instances. So you get a quick whirlwind overview of what they are. We do the same with artificial intelligence and machine learning. So again, very quickly introduce what they are, look at some of the services within Azure, so cognitive services, language and understanding, information services. So you essentially stand up a web bot that can do back and forth chat with someone, just to kind of introduce some of these other areas that you might not be looking at right now to be using in the enterprise or to be using as a developer, but stuff that is probably coming up, stuff that you hear about on podcasts or conferences, blogs, things like that. Just so you get an idea as to what Azure can do. It's not just running VMs. It's not just running web apps. There's a whole bunch of other services, and that, you know, progression probably from the IaaS services, more of the PaaS services, getting into SaaS as well. So you can kind of see the broad spectrum of what Azure can offer you.
Awesome. And I think some of that's really important, especially if somebody's new to this and they're looking to really engage with it. And maybe if they're looking further downstream at a certification. So things like what is the 533 today, before that gets retired, aligns pretty nicely to some of this content. And some of it will actually come into the newer certs that have been announced too, the AZ-100 and the 101, because there's going to be all sorts of paths and things in there. And folks do need to know it, and they need to understand it. Like, you might not need to know how to do natural language processing with Lewis and how it works, you know, on the back end and how it breaks out words and does stemming, but you need to know that it's there and what it is and potentially how it can be stitched together with all these services. I always talk about the cloud as kind of like learning how to like make a quilt or crochet. We're always, you know, just putting all this different stuff together and seeing what it looks like when it turns out at the end.
Yeah. And there's a ton of great resources on how you can prepare for those certification exams, and they are worthwhile if you want to be able to validate and to prove to employees, whatever, that, you know, you really do know your stuff here. The book isn't designed specifically to guide you through the exams. It is much more of a natural way of, if you go through this, you're going to learn the stuff that you need day to day, and you'll probably know a good chunk of what's needed for the exams too, just your natural way of learning it. And I think that was a pretty good balance, because there's a lot of things that you may not need right now, but at some point someone will ask you about it, and it would be good to have a little bit of a head start and know what they're on about.
Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info. All right, so I have one other question too, just kind of looking through the book. I'm going to kind of switch topics a little bit, but okay. The high availability section. Yep. So you have in there kind of a few different sections. You have the ARM templates, you have high availability, redundancy, load balancing, applications at scale, traffic and routing, monitoring, troubleshooting. All of those kind of seem like the IT pro type concept stuff I'm familiar with. And then in the middle of there, there's the Cosmos DB, which I've heard of, but it's like there's Cosmos DB that seems more like an application, but there's not like SQL DB or any of those. So how does Cosmos DB get in the middle of the high availability section?
Cosmos DB is one of those really cool services that I knew a little bit about before I started the book, but I want to kind of dig into this. And so if you go into your traditional SQL, Microsoft SQL Server deployments, and how you're going to cluster that, and how you're going to deal with witnesses, and how you're going to deal with storage, and how you're going to then replicate that if you want to do it geographically. So Cosmos DB is more of a NoSQL data store. So it's a little bit different conceptually to try and wrap your head around, but it's still a database store. But it's a service essentially that runs within Azure. So you would put your data into Cosmos DB, and then if you want to, at the click of a button, you can then replicate that across to West Europe, or you can replicate that out to Southeast Asia. You don't have to worry about that kind of replication and redundancy and what's the latency and how am I dealing with clustered storage and things like that. So again, it's kind of that natural progression of you can see how you can do it in virtual machines or scale sets behind a load balancer. And if you still want to then go ahead and build that more traditional SQL Server approach on an IaaS infrastructure, cool. Go ahead and do that. But again, it's trying to lead into, there's other ways that you can do this in Azure. Cosmos DB has a service that can replicate all of this for you. And just introduce something a little bit different, kind of give a little bit of a nod towards the developer audience as well. So it's not just all focused on IT pros, because the two are going to work together, right? So the developers come and say, I've heard of Cosmos DB, I want to use it. And the IT pros like, I've got no idea what that is. I know SQL Server. I know my SQL. So you're going to have to help me out here. At least you've got some kind of idea of what Cosmos DB is and why the developers are so keen to use something like that.
Yeah, no, the IT pros are going to want to know how to secure it so security doesn't come after them and their boss doesn't get annoyed.
Right.
How do I do service layer firewalls, and what does this PaaS service look like, and do I really need to be scared of web apps? Can we lock them down with client certs, or what does that look like?
Yeah, and that's one of those tough ones where it's like, again, you already know a lot of this information from what you've been doing on premises, or you've been doing the IaaS role. And I often saw tension, I felt tension, you know, go back a few years when I was doing this before I came to Microsoft, between the developers and the IT operations team. And you were never entirely sure what the developers were wanting to do, maybe, and what this technology was. So again, the more I can try and introduce some of that in the book, even once you get into, you know, containers with Azure Kubernetes service, you know, that's much more what developers would want to do, but there's still a ton of infrastructure to this. Like, Kubernetes is not just focused on developers. There's a lot of infrastructure that goes to it. And once the IT operations folks understand that, you know, hopefully they get on board with it and there can be that partnership and you can make sure that it is secure and it is reliable and ultimately benefits your customers.
Yeah. No, I think especially if you've taught them how to integrate into the pipeline. So some of the tooling will be approachable to them. Hey, we already have these templates we deploy with developers. Can you please come in and, you know, let's do the DevOps thing and just have a sane conversation. Yep. And, you know, go ahead and integrate into our pipeline, and hey, maybe we'll integrate into yours as well and see what that looks like. Or we do understand what's going on with AC or AKS. So, hey, by the way, when you deploy that service, here's why it's eating up all those IP addresses. Yep. And it's doing this for its pods and its nodes. Or it helps, I think, to be able to speak intelligently about some of that, even when, you know, developers come to you and they might say, I really want to do Kubernetes. Okay, well, do we want to do it as AKS, as a managed service? Should we be looking at something maybe like AC CS engine and rolling our own? Yep. Or should we be looking at, you know, we're not doing Kubernetes at all today. We're doing Open Foundry or something else. Let's go ahead and keep doing what we know. So it helps you have really sane, balanced conversations to approach in and make some decisions about how you're going to adopt the cloud and really hit, you know, whatever pace you're going to hit or stride you're going to hit within your transformation.
Yep, absolutely.
I like the point you made there, Ian, and it's something I've heard a lot is there's a lot of IT pros that are like, well, if we go to the cloud, what am I going to do? I don't have servers to maintain, to patch, all of that. But like you said, there's still a lot of infrastructure, a lot of these services that maybe the devs want to use, but they don't always understand. Maybe it's performance impacts, or maybe it's how do you secure it? How do you secure the endpoints? What can you do from a networking, creating subnets, putting endpoints in various subnets, all of that, that job of the IT pro, I feel like it's shifting from not necessarily managing physical servers, but managing the security and understanding the services and how they work together and how you can help your developers with which services to use, which services maybe give you some better performance, and then how to secure all those services.
Yeah, I think that the security is a big one. That's still going to be relevant. How do you get additional storage into those applications if it's a PaaS service? How do you back that data up? How do you encrypt that data? And how do you troubleshoot it when something starts to go wrong? How do you pull the logs off it? So there's still a lot of those very core IT operations things that are still going to come up even when you're in a PaaS service like web apps or Kubernetes servers. So there's a lot of those things where the developers, it's probably, again, you got to meet in the middle of the developers. Maybe you need to learn a little bit about IT operations. The IT operations maybe you need to learn a little bit about what the developers do and understand a little bit of JSON or something like that and try and get to that partnership, which is what, you know, DevOps approach is trying to do, people working together rather than individual silos.
Yeah, and you have a whole section on that, whole securing that. I noticed the things you were mentioning were like, you just like went down your whole secure by default.
And they don't have the table of contents in front of me either. It's ingrained in my eyeball. Back of my eyeballs, I haven't done this for so long. But yeah, so that again, it's trying to get across some of those secure things. There's a lot of things in Azure where they do secure it by default. So you deploy a managed disk. Managed disks are encrypted at rest by default. When you deploy virtual machines, I believe now, if you deploy it through the portal, even things like RDP is disabled by default. You have to open that up. So it's understanding some of these things so that if a developer tries to drop a machine, it's like, I can't connect to it. So, okay, you still have that ops knowledge that can help guide them through that.
Yeah, and I think that's important too. We tend to touch on that a lot is you do need to know the basics no matter where you come in. So if you're an IT pro and you're deploying virtual machines or you're a developer and you need shared storage, you're still probably going to consume the PaaS storage service, which VMs do, or you might do over here on the side. And how you approach that might be a little bit differently, but it's the same service at the end of the day that you're going to consume. Yep. So you need to understand what the service is, what the performance tiers are, how much it's going to cost, what the configuration looks like at kind of all levels of the stack, right? Not just security, but maybe, ooh, what if I turn on this static website thing? What does that do? Yep. And come back and put it together. And then, oh, I need some DNS. Well, where can I get some DNS? Can I use mine today or should I use Azure DNS or go over here? So, you know, I tend to view it all as kind of a great resource and then being able to hop in and out and say, oh, I remember that thing, or let me hop into that section on ARM. Maybe I deployed this thing through the portal and I'm really interested in figuring out how I can automate that and make my life better. And maybe I want to automate it with, I heard about that automation service. So let me go read about that and see, yep, and see what I can do there. So it all blends together very nicely.
Yeah. And even, you know, you touched on automation. So even things like if you're doing DSE, design stack configuration, so building the Azure automation as a DSE pull server, and it can also now run against Linux. So if you're working with Linux virtual machines, then okay, you could still use PowerShell DSE to run on Linux, which was kind of a trip for me to try and wrap my head around conceptually. But there is a lab example in the book of how you can manage a Linux virtual machine with DSE the same way you would a Windows machine. It can do hybrid as well, the same thing. So it is to try and get towards some of that automation thing ultimately, is that you wouldn't be sitting down, click, click, click in the portal. Things are trying to lead towards that resource manager template deployment or Terraform or, you know, whatever you would want to use. I mean, how you can use things like Azure Automation or some kind of pipeline, be that Azure Visual Studio Team Services, something like that.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably an important thing to call out for everybody is that this book is targeted at Azure and Azure resources, but it doesn't mean it's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
There may be something else out there, and it's not a knock on the technology or anything else, but hey, this book has a purpose and that's what it's out there for. Yep. It's not there to teach you Terraform or teach you Chef or teach you Puppet. It's just to say, hey, here's a first party service and the way you can do it. If you use something else, if you're more comfortable with something else, or you've read in a service map someplace else, like you're coming over from AWS land, you may want to keep doing that thing, and that's okay. But this introduced the core concepts and constructs to get everybody onboarded. Just a month of lunches.
Yeah, it really is those core concepts. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Terraform. You know, I really like things like Ansible too from the Red Hat side. So there's a lot of really cool automation tools that will tie in quite happily with Azure. There's a lot of resource providers, extensions, modules that can tie into things like Chef, Puppet as well. So you don't have to think, I have to use Azure Resource Manager templates. And that's also kind of one of the reasons why I didn't do a whole bunch in the book on it. If you understand the core concepts, what resources you need, how you would configure those resources, then you can go and say, we've already got an investment in Ansible. We want to continue using it. Great. So go and use the Azure module for Ansible. You already know what resources you need to be able to provision, how you want those configured. Just figure out how to squeeze that into your playbook. So you can use, again, take that existing knowledge that you already have and now be able to plug that into Azure.
Yeah, and the beauty of it is you've introduced everybody to the Cloud Shell and all that tooling's built in there
exactly.
Anyway. And Cloud Shell runs on containers, so you're just doing it all from the start. It's all, yep. All well and good.
Hi, I'm Steve Peschke, and I'm one of the founders at Office 365. I worked at Microsoft for over 18 years, and one of the most common questions I got is, how do I know what's going on with the health of my Office 365 tenant? When there's a problem with your tenant, you need to know what's going on before your users. We help you understand not only when your tenant goes down, but how well it's performing. When you do have a problem, where do you start looking? Is it your network? Is it your tenant? Is it some feature inside of Office 365? Our network analysis features can pinpoint performance issues and help you figure out where those bottlenecks are. Sign up for a free 90-day trial today at office365mon.com. Stay in the know and stay in control with office365mon.com.
So I know you're doing a lot with containers, so I am going to take that option off the table. But if you were to pick one service in Azure that you really like playing with, you just think it's really cool, what is like your favorite service or one of the coolest services you think that they have in Azure that you like to play with, like to use, like to learn about? Something along those lines.
I really like the idea of IoT. I'm just not in a position where I can really figure out how to do anything with it. But I do see there's a huge potential there. So probably it's Cosmos DB that I mentioned earlier. You know, having been in that IT operations role for a number of years where a lot of it is trying to figure out database performance and storage specifically for databases. And then how do you start to cluster it and back those up and make them redundant? When I saw Cosmos DB and I started to wrap my head around it, say, okay, that's what I'll go with. And I mentioned that Cosmos DB is a NoSQL service, so it's a little bit different in how it stores the data, but you can also query it with structured query language. So even if it's something that's totally new to you, your developers might understand NoSQL, you can still query using SQL queries that you might already know. But just that idea of, you know, at the click of a button, I can now say, I want this replicated across 10 different regions, and I don't care what happens behind the scenes. It'll just do it for me. And I don't have to, that abstraction was just magic when I first saw that. So that's probably is one of the main services that I would say was pretty cool to get on board with.
Yeah, Cosmos is a crazy service where
right.
You sit down and you start thinking about, like, wait, I want to deploy a document. Do I want to deploy a document database? Do I want it to use this API? Do I want it to use a SQL API? Am I actually trying to do a graph or like a Gremlin API? Like, what am I trying to do here?
Yeah, there's a lot to
and
it.
And running it up and doing it. Yeah, there's a ton going on there. Awesome. We're actually going to give away a couple copies of this book because your publisher was nice enough to share some codes with us. So the way we're going to do that is this episode will come out right before Ignite. So we'll probably give those away during the week of Ignite or just after. And what we'd like people to do is just tweet at the podcast Twitter handle, which is at MS Cloud IT Pro, and go ahead and just use the hashtag Azure Book. So tweet at us at that handle, use the hashtag Azure Book, and let us know something that you might have learned over the course of this episode. And then we'll do a quick drawing. And I think we've got three or four of those to give away. So a good opportunity for everybody to potentially get a nice new EPUB or PDF and pick up some free knowledge along the way.
Yep. I think it's available as Kindle, as EPUB, and as Livebook as well. And I think we've also got a discount code that we can probably share out as well. So if you aren't lucky enough to get one of those free copies, and I think we've got a discount code that we can share out as well. That should get you, was it 40% off, I think?
Yep.
So that's worth checking.
Yep. And we'll make sure all that's in the show notes. So everyone will be able to find the show notes at msclouditpro.com for this. And we'll make sure that we have links to not just the book and discount codes, but also to any of the relevant resources that we've talked about today. So I know we've talked about a bunch of different services. You know, we'll make sure that we have links to those and maybe to some of the quick start repos and other things that we talked about that will help people get ramped up. If anyone wants to kind of follow you, Ian, get in touch with you, are you on Twitter? Do you have a website? What's the best way to do that?
I am on Twitter. I'm at Foldsy, F-O-U-L-D-S-Y. I have a wonderful blog that I think was last updated in 2011, something like that. So Twitter is probably the easiest way to try and follow along with me. It will be a mix of random Azure stuff and then things with dogs or things with model transit. It's very much a mix of just me. But if I would love to know what people are looking at building with Azure. If you do follow along with the book, if there are examples that you come across, if there are templates that you find that are cool, and you know, let me know. It's always fun to try and see what people are looking at doing in Azure.
Perfect. Thank you so much for the time today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. This was fun.
Not a problem. Thank you, and we will talk to you both later.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Bye-bye, Ian. Bye, Scott.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.